Again, we look at the book of Acts chapter 10, and this evening we'll start at verse 21. And you'll notice that the men have come to Joppa, and they have requested as to the presence of Simon Peter, and they are now assured that he is at this house of Simon the Tanner, and that he is lodged there. In verse 21, the Bible tells us that Peter went down to the men which were sent unto him from Cornelius and said, "Behold, I am he whom ye seek. What is the cause wherefore ye are come?" And as I read that particular question that Simon Peter asks, I get the impression that he has not yet connected the vision or the trance that he has had and preaching the gospel to the Gentiles and their being brought into the work of God as Christians, or perhaps even as churches made up entirely of Gentiles. I don't think that Peter has made that kind of mental or spiritual connection yet. So when they are asked, "What have you come here to this place seeking me? Why are you here? What do you want?" The Bible tells us that they then recounted the incident as Cornelius had told them. And they said, "Cornelius the centurion, a just man, and one that fears God, and of good report among all the nation of the Jews." Now this seems to indicate that he may have been stationed at different places. And when he was stationed at a particular place as a centurion in the Roman army, that he always attended synagogue and gave himself to worship with the Jews. And that every place he had been in this circumstance, the people gave good report of him. And this man was warned from God by an angel to send for thee into his house and to bear words of thee. Now we get the idea that this man, Cornelius, whenever the Lord revealed himself to him, he said, you send for this man because he shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. So we get the impression from that, and get the impression from this, that they are expecting words of instruction. They've already come to this conclusion that there is a lack, there is a void in Cornelius's relationship to God and his work for God. There is some things he ought to do. It's not having to do with his physical makeup. It's not having to do with his intellectual understanding. You know, they're not expecting this man whom the Lord is named by an angel to come and give him a physical and recommend a diet. I don't think they're expecting this man that they've gone to bring back to Caesarea. I don't think they're expecting him to bring plans for a gymnasium so that Cornelius can play and get his strength back. It has to do with a message. And here they again indicate that we expect to hear words of thee. So the expectation is that you're going to come and you're going to tell us something. "Then called he them in and lodged them. And on the morrow Peter went away with them, and certain brethren from Joppa accompanied him." And I have no reason to doubt at all that these certain brethren, whom we'll find later, were six in number, We have no reason to believe that these were included in the instructions of God so that there would be a, quote, arm of the church present. The taking of these six brethren seems to be the idea of Peter completely and totally, because God's instructions have always included the invitation and the command to Peter and to Peter only. So I don't want us to get the idea that God sent for seven men when he sent the messengers that he had sent for seven men. He sent for one. He told him where he was and how to find him. And obviously, Peter was anxious to have company. Perhaps he, being uncertain of what was going to happen, making a journey with these two household servants and this soldier, traveling a distance some 30 miles, I think it was infinite wisdom to invite six of the brethren to go with him. But the Bible tells us that he invited them in and that he lodged them for that night. And yet, all of us can see the urgency of the circumstance. But there is a certain tyranny in urgency. Most mistakes are made when we're in a hurry. Churches have made bad mistakes when they just couldn't wait another week. They just couldn't wait another month. Churches have made tremendous mistakes, and you've made bad mistakes in your life because urgency drove you to a bad decision. Now, we have to understand, and Paul put it well when he said, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And the human body has its limitations. Now, here are three men who've come on a special mission, and they've told Simon Peter what they want. Our master, Cornelius, who's a centurion and a very important person, we've come to get you to take you to him. And Peter said, come in and spend the night. You know, I like that kind of attitude because these men were weary from traveling, and it was better for them to spend the night and leave the next morning. But you know, there's always the impression of those that if we dare rest, we don't love lost souls. If we dare take time for recreation, we don't love lost souls. If we dare take time to work, we don't love lost souls. There are many people who cannot show their love for lost souls and the work of God without killing themselves. And they hope that at an early age they can die of a heart attack, and therefore they can prove to people that I really loved God. I respect men who are able to. You know, we don't get many options. There are always people who are telling us they'd rather burn out than rust out. Why can't we just wear out? I think there's another option to rusting out. There's another option to burning out. And that option is just wearing out in a natural way ourselves in the work of God. Now, they came in and they spent the night. They were humans, and they needed rest. And then in verse 24, on the morrow, after they entered into Caesarea, and Cornelius waited for them, and called together his kinsmen and near friends. I like the idea that they were here, gathered together, waiting for them. I like the idea that Cornelius had gathered his kinsmen. I like the idea that he had gathered his near friends. And as Peter was coming in, Cornelius met him and fell down at his feet and worshiped him. Now, We don't need to make more out of that than's really there. The idea that he worshiped him in the sense of worshiping him as God is an absurdity. He did not do that. Cornelius knew that there was one God, but this indicates that he did bow himself down and he gave Simon Peter reverence and respect by bowing in his presence, which was not uncommon at all in that day and age. But I think the thing that Simon Peter wanted him to understand was, we are men. I'm a man, and you're a man. And this is what Peter said. He took him and said, stand up, I myself also am a man. And I think Peter said, look, we are men. I'm not an aristocrat. I'm not a king. I am a man and you're a man. So you stand up and let's talk this thing out between two men. But I can understand why Cornelius would feel the way he did after having this vision from God. And I think you'll learn that it's been 4 days since he had this vision. And I'm sure these 4 days have been filled with anxiety and been filled with anticipation. He's wondering, what is this man going to tell me when he comes? Because the angel said, he will tell thee what thou oughtest to do. And I imagine that Cornelius has been raking his mind and reading and thinking and saying, now, what else can I do? What else should I do? Where have I fallen short? What's this man going to say to me? So he had everything ready, gotten all the folding chairs, put them in the living room, had all of his kinfolk there, and he had his near friends there, and they were all waiting, and here comes the preacher, and Cornelius simply goes and bows before him, and Peter said, look, I'm not a god, or I'm not an aristocrat, I'm just a man, and you're a man. Let's get on that basis, and let's get on that footing. And I'm going to tell you something. I think we need to understand that I'm a man and you are humans, and there's no clergy and laity distinction made in the Word of God. And any man who likes to feel that he is spiritually superior, who glories in titles like bishop and archbishop, who glories in the idea that I am a clergyman and you are poor laymen, is a man who has misunderstood the Spirit of Jesus Christ and who is ignorant of the New Testament. And our relationship, 100% horizontal, just eye to eye. Always, in every circumstance. Now, whenever he stood him up and said, let's deal with this not as an aristocrat and a lesser person. In verse 27, the Bible tells us that he talked with him. That as he talked with him, so it has the impression that he met him outside the area where the people were gathered. He went in and found many that were come together. Now, when Peter walked into this assembly, this group of people, and I don't know how many were there, but evidently it was a pretty good crowd. They were all Gentiles. Now, this really confused Peter. Because he was not supposed to be in an unclean circumstance to involve himself. See, he's not there to sell insurance. See, he's involved in religious instruction. Now, this is a religious circumstance. And the idea is that religion outside the prescribed places is very suspect to the Jew. and that is outside the temple, outside the synagogue, and especially with Gentiles who are unclean people, he was very, very nervous. I lived in Hialeah, Florida, and I worked with people who were Jewish people and became very, very good friends with the supervisor of the factory where I worked, and I spent quite a bit of time with him in his home, and he was a very liberal person in his religious views. In fact, after I'd surrendered to preach and gone back, he asked me to preach in the synagogue, but I really didn't think he... I thought he was just being nice, and I still think he was, but I went by his house one time, and when I went in, he and his wife were very, very busy. And they were some of the items in the house they were getting rid of. And he had a little plaque that had the Ten Commandments written on it. And he had a hammer and a nail. And he was nailing this plaque to the doorpost. Now, that is on the door facing. And it's confusing to me. And he said, "Oh, Johnny, don't worry about it." Said, "Bess's daddy and mother are coming," and he said he's one of them Orthodox Jews, and said, "Man, the house has got to be kosher, so we got to clean out everything that ain't kosher. Got to nail up all this stuff so he'll be comfortable." It had to be a quote. You know what kosher means? It means clean. So it had to be a clean house, and they had to get rid of anything that was forbidden to the Jew to eat. So that's what his wife was doing. That's what they were doing. And now this is what people, his daddy-in-law would not come. He wouldn't set foot in that house until it had been inspected by the rabbi and declared kosher. He just wouldn't come to see him. Well, this kind of attitude that Peter was involved in. He came to this house, and here were a bunch of Gentiles, and Peter became very uncomfortable. And it was not a kosher dwelling. And it disturbed him. He said unto them, "You know how that it is an unlawful thing for a man that is a Jew to keep company or come unto one of another nation." Now, I think Simon has begun to put two and two together. For he states, "But God hath showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean." When had God showed him that? Well, God showed him that in that trance that he found himself in, when he saw the sheet or the vessel come down with all the unclean animals on it, with the instruction from God to slay and eat. And Peter argued with him, said, no, that's unclean. And God said, "Whatever I declare to be clean is clean." That was in the back of Simon Peter's mind, and he's thinking about that, and he see these people, and he said, "Look, you realize that it's unlawful, but I also realize that God has told me to ignore the circumstances because he has some work for me to do. Therefore came I unto you without gainsaying as soon as I was sent for." Why did he come to them without gainsaying, without complaining? Because God had showed him that whatever he did, God had invited him and commanded him to do it. It involved saying, he knew that, he involved meeting. And evidently he thought it was just Cornelius, which had been a one-on-one situation. And this is probably what Peter had been thinking about as he traveled that 30 miles. As here, I'll be with Cornelius, centurion, who's a proselyte, or at least a partial proselyte, not a full proselyte. And I'll be talking to him. He is a Gentile, but he's a man of learning and accomplishment. And this is not going to be too bad. But I think that really, the thing that really astounded him was when he came in, and these people lived some rather large homes and had some rather extensive villas. And I think this was really astonishing to see this crowd of people. Now, verse 29. "I ask therefore, for what intent have you sent for me?" What do you want? And then Cornelius relates his experience again. In verse 30, he states, And Cornelius said, 4 days ago, I was fasting until this hour, and at the ninth hour I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing and said, Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, thine alms are had in remembrance in the sight of God. Send therefore to Joppa and call hither Simon, whose surname is Peter, as he is lodged in the house of one Simon a tanner by the seaside, who when he cometh, now notice again, shall speak unto thee. Again, they're anticipating a message. They're anticipating words. They're anticipating speech. He shall speak unto thee. And Cornelius said, immediately, forthright, without waiting at all, therefore I sent to thee, and thou hast well done that thou art come. And there's sort of a hint involved in this that it's a good thing you did what God told you to do. Now we are all here present before God. Isn't that a strange statement? This is not a temple. This is not the synagogue. This is not Jerusalem. These are Gentiles. And yet, this man says, we all here present before God. Do you see a progression of thought in Revelation? You remember the woman who argued with Jesus at the well? And she said, you people say you ought to worship in Jerusalem, but we say that here on the mount, that's where people ought to worship God, here in Samaria. And Jesus said, the hour is, and the hour's coming, when you won't worship God in Jerusalem nor in Samaria. But the idea is, wherever men and women are gathered together in my name, there they'll perform a worship of God. There'll be no stately tabernacles necessary, no temples, no special houses where you must go in order to worship God. But people will be able to worship God in spirit and in truth. And God has set in motion the same kind of portable tabernacle that the children of Israel had in the early days of their history. The days of their wandering, and their early days in the promised land. The church is a portable thing. That is, as the people move, the church moves. It is people. And wherever they gather, they can gather to worship God. We're here before God. Now notice again, we're here before God to hear all things that are commanded thee of God. We're here to hear. Have you noticed? He shall tell thee. You're going to receive instruction. He shall tell thee what thou oughtest to do. Then the soldier and the two servants say, come and speak to us the words. Tell us. Say unto us. And we're beginning to see the importance of the preached word. You remember now that there hasn't been any church but a Jewish church, and they, though many of the people have been dispersed throughout these areas, not the apostles. They stayed in Jerusalem. They stayed in Jerusalem. That is, they didn't scatter, and their ties are to Jerusalem. You're going to see Simon Peter after this circumstance. He's going to go back to Jerusalem, and they're going to, it seems, try to stay in the city of Jerusalem, because as Jews, and every apostle was a Jew, they're going to be tied to it. They're going to be tied to it. One man said every apostle but Luke was a Jew. And that, no one thought it was funny when he said it either. Do you know that our work for God is a work of the tongue? Why is it, and what is the reluctance that all of us possess in saying? You know, this is God's ordained method of spiritual communication. It's the tongue, the witness, the saying, the speaking. And the part that is on the opposite of the saying and the speaking is the hearing and the receiving and the believing. This is God's way. There's the speaker and the listener. There's the sayer and the hearer. There's the one who encourages belief and the one who believes. And this is the essence of our work. It's hearing and believing. This is what we do. This is who we are. This is how people are changed. This is the way nations are evangelized. The speaking of God's people and the hearing by those who are lost. And Paul makes mentions, how shall they hear without a preacher? And Jesus said, if any man will hear and do my sayings, he's like a man who builds a house on a rock. And here again is the idea of hearing, and here's the idea of having faith and acting upon what we hear. And yet we emphasize so many, many other things as being so important to the work of God, when in essence they're not important to God, they're just important to us. They're really not important to God. They're not a part of God's plan. They're not a part of God's command. They're just important to us, and just things we're intrigued with things that are really little importance. We need to really get our minds clear that God has called us to speak and to say. That's our jobs. That's what a witness is, to speak and to say. And this is what Peter said, I've come to do. And then we'll notice his message in verse 34. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, you know, if he'd been the modern missionary, he had opened his purse and given them money to build a hospital. But he didn't. He opened his mouth. We'll talk about that later. Our musicians will come and we'll sing a hymn of invitation. And as we do, we invite you to hear. To hear. And to receive and believe and become a doer of the word and not a hearer only.